Hi, everybody. This is Mark Chaffardini with Go See Talk. Thanks for coming back to the Go See Talk podcast experience. And we are going to hit fast forward on this interview with Greg Bjorkman, the co-writer and director of Press Play. A really fun time travel movie, not like anything you're used to seeing before.
Why do you like records so much?
You have this tangible thing right there in front of you.
I love that.
I have something for you. You are now recording the very first song on our mixtape.
So, Greg, welcome to the show. How's things in your world?
It's doing well. The movie just came out. It feels good to finally be able to share it with the world.
Excellent, excellent. And I see, based on your setup, you look like you've been doing a lot of press. You've got the smooth tone. You got the microphone near your face. You look, you do radio all day.
I got this mic over the pandemic because I just wanted to mess around a little bit with pro audio. And before filming, when we were pitching the project, Logan Lerman told me you've got a very soothing voice. You should do voiceovers or something. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll get the mic and see where that takes me.
It's great when an actor tells you that too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if it's a guy who's made a bunch already.
Well, Greg, what, before we get into Press Play, I'd like to know just a little bit more about your VFX background and what your specialties and hobbies are before you got into the director's chair.
So I started in this industry in editorial. Actually, that was the biggest start that I had. I had worked previously in some music videos as a PA and on American Idol as a PA. So You Think You Can Dance as a PA. But when I worked on this one music video with Jason Kisvarde, who's a production designer, just had a movie come out, Everything Everywhere All at Once. He works with the Daniels. When I worked on a music video way back in, I think it was like 2010 or 2011, I was talking to him and I got some really good advice, which was, if you know where you want to end up in the industry, you try to get at least in the same department as quick as possible, because you don't want to be stuck as a PA, because people can get stuck as a PA. And so I said, all right, well, I think the easiest way to get to directing is maybe through a smaller group of people. And that would be through editorial, because I'll be in the room with the director. Whereas if I was on set, there's, hundreds of people potentially, and, you have a job to do. And if you don't do the job, you're going to have somebody that's in between you and the director, scold you for not doing your job when you're trying to just watch what's happening. And so I decided that I would try to get to editorial, and I had been taking classes at UW Milwaukee before I moved out here, where I had basically learned, how to, create visual effects and stuff on my own, and taught myself editing as well. And then when I came out here, I continued to go to school for a little bit and took an editing class. And my hunch is that the professor that I talked to sent my resume to an editor that was repped by his agent. And then that got forwarded to Rob. And that's how I ended up in editorial for Stuck in Love. And so I'm self-taught when it comes to visual effects. I went the, Andrew Kramer route, where I would watch all the entertaining videos that he would put out, as well as trying to learn stuff on YouTube. I went to school for cinematography. Didn't tell anybody that I wanted to be a director, because there was a lot of people that were saying that they wanted to be directors, and I didn't want to be grouped into that category of people who are wannabe directors. So I kept that to myself and just tried to learn as much as possible.
Okay. Well, I feel like I have two possible ways I can go. Maybe if it doesn't go right, I could use a time machine to go back and ask the correct question. But let's lead off with the VFX, because there's something really kind of cute and charming about the end of the movie. The screener I got actually showed some, I guess, some stock footage or some dailies where they didn't have the effects put in. It was like you'd see a phone with a background, but the messages weren't there, or something was on a computer. Even though when she typed in, when Laura typed in questions about time travel in the Google page showed up, but none of the effects of actually typing out the question.
Oh, interesting.
So can you speak more to that? Like, did you, aside from being a director, did you have any input on the effects of this movie?
Yeah, so I did a couple of the finals actually for the film. It's in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler. But I did the shot where Harrison gets hit by the car, as well as some other stuff throughout the film, like some screens, and then some fixes here and there, split screens and such. But yeah, you know, it's funny because as a director, you know, you kind of want to know all the departments, and having known visual effects, you know, you go into shooting a scene like that and you want to be more concerned about performance at that point. So it was nice to have Brad Parker, who's also a director, come in and just kind of supervise the visual effects for that. He allowed me to get the performance out of actors when I needed to, when there were visual effects scenes, like for instance, the motion control arm where Laura gets sucked up towards the ceiling. That was a fun sequence. And like, I don't think it would be the same if Brad was not there. So it's good to have, you know, the takeaway I think is it's good to have those types of, you know, those people that you can count on and trust for those roles to be able to get the movie that you want out of it.
Well, what are your experiences working with Laura and Harrison in character? Because one of the best, we'll just call it an effect, is actually not an effect. It's a single take shot in a bowling alley. And I want to say it's like a 2 or 3 minute scene. So what was your experience setting that up, the logistics of it, and how many times did it take?
Well, you know, it's funny because like you make decisions on the day about, you know, time and what, how much time you have is, you know, very small relative to the day for shooting. And when we shot that scene, I felt like this was one of those opportunities where the actors could showcase, you know, what they could do. And, you know, showcase the emotions that they could bring to the screen, and what they felt about the story. And so I intentionally made it a oneer. And you know, it wasn't a Spielberg oneer because there's nobody that's crossing frame, which makes it a challenge for the actors, but I had already seen plenty of what they were capable of doing. And so going into that scene, I knew that we would be fine. And we did do a number of takes to get the one that I thought was like, this is it. And I think we might have run out of time to do some other stuff in that particular scene. In the preceding, actually, so we filmed that scene at the same day, I think, or maybe it was back-to-back days because scenes were duplicated. We were in locations twice or maybe one day. So I think the first half of the day we filmed some stuff. I think we might've filmed that scene. And then the second half we filmed the previous scene. So it was quite a challenge to do, you know, to do everything in such a small amount of time. So the oneer was both an option to save some time for us in setups, but it was also an opportunity to have the actors show off their abilities, because they did an amazing job.
Oh, I agree. And a lot of that too, I wonder how much of that is rehearsed versus spontaneous, because there's another scene where Harrison and Laura are in, they're painting, and Harrison paints Laura's face, and it actually looks like a pretty genuine response. Like, she didn't expect that to happen. And so we might have captured gold. So, you know, was that something that you did rehearse, or are they just that good at reacting?
You know, Clara is an incredible actor. That, I believe, was scripted. But the... I think one of the magics of movie making is that you can go into a day and have a plan, but then you can make some changes like on the fly. And sometimes those changes make the spontaneity of the choice, you know, come to life a little bit more. So for instance, I think that I'm not sure if the, I mean, there's plenty of stuff in the movie where, you know, there's spontaneity, but like the paint fight, for instance, I'm not sure if we had scripted it, them running out into the rain, but you know, that was a fun little moment for the two of them to play with.
Well, aside from time travel, which I'd love to dive into, but there's some actually more important themes in the film. There's sort of the duality of people's worldviews and your life experiences, sort of colliding, because if I get this right, so Laura lost her dad when she was 15 and he taught her art. So she's kind of a free spirit. And then Harrison is going to go to medical school where it's all about, you know, regimen and science and stuff. So the fact that they came together in the first place is a nice juxtaposition, but it also goes a little further as to the decisions they make and whether they're going to stay together. I guess all that said, when you're hiring both Lewis and Clara for these roles, I guess, how much the actors need to embody the character to make these things come to life?
You know, that's a very good question, because, I would argue that it's extremely important to have an actor in a role that can put a little bit of themselves into that role. It makes it more real, more believable. You know, meeting with both of them, you know, Clara, I knew, just from, you know, watching I Am Mother and seeing like what her other films and shows that she's worked on previously were, I knew that she had, this certain element. And then meeting with Lewis, I knew that he had, you know, a similar share of that element. So, and that element is like being able to be true to yourself and the character at the same time. And I think that that's extremely important when it comes to acting is, you know, there are, you know, method actors who put a little bit of, you know, a craziness to it, but like the emotional stories that are told on film need to have as much truth to them as possible. And so being able to find actors that, you know, have that true line is really important for a film like this. Very important. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go back to your editing background. I think that one of I think a parallel between your role as a director and maybe Laura and her experience. I mean, she goes to an art show and really puts herself out there. So you're, as a director, you're putting yourself out there. What confidence, or what did you learn as an editor or somebody who was close to what you wanted to do to help you bridge the gap between wants and actually now being the man in charge?
You know, it's funny because you go into directing a project after having written it, expecting you know it to, I mean, there's a lot of anxieties with going into filming, but there's something that also you know, I kind of learned as a kid by playing musical instruments and auditioning for things, is that you can have as much nerves going into, you know, directing or, you know, auditioning for something as you want, but as soon as you start doing it, you know, you'll be fine. It's literally like getting on a bicycle after not being on a bicycle for a long time. And just, you know it. It's just the nerves of, you know, doubt. And I think that we all kind of, you know, experience that as artists, and making something, like putting something out in the world is a very, you know, scary thing. But, you know, if you don't put anything out in the world, are you really living? You know, like, can you go through life so reserved that, you know, you don't take any chances? I think that if you're not really living, if you don't take chances. And I don't know, maybe I'm getting too philosophical here, but that's just the way that I view it.
No, I think you hit on something that one of my favorite movies is Three Kings. And there's a part in David O. Russell's movie where Spike Jonze and George Clooney are having a conversation. And so George Clooney tells Spike Jonze's character, well, you do the thing you're scared of first, and then you get the courage afterwards. And so Spike's responsible. Well, that's a pretty bass ackwards way of doing it. But I think that, kind of like you said, you know, you need to just get out there and, I mean, lucky for you, this movie turned out to be tremendously entertaining and successful. And, but you know, what did you lean more on? Did you feel like you're leaning more on the themes of time travel, the abilities of the actors, you know, your own personal sensibilities?
So, I mean, when we wrote the script, we definitely based our time travel on Back to the Future. But knowing that there's going to be a lot of people out there that try to poke holes in your logic and, you know, making sure that that's really, you know, well situated is a very important aspect of the story. But having seen movies like About Time, which do have time travel in them, but I would almost consider that secondary to the story. You know, it's more of the vessel for telling this this story of loss. Knowing that you could fill those holes that someone may poke in the time travel with, you know, emotional elements that, you know, make the story, you know, believable in what it is, kind of gave us a little bit of confidence in that regard for shooting it and making and putting this project out there. So maybe I misremembered what your question was.
I don't even listen to myself. I'm just, we're rolling. This is fun. We're jazzing. But more on that note, I did like the fact that it felt more like, you know, time travel as a conceit sometimes becomes so beholden to a device or, you know, to some theory like time dilation or something like that. But this was just, this felt like the nicer version of a butterfly effect or something like that, to where you're using these emotions to sort of get you through to where you want to be, like manifesting time travel, so to speak.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I talked to James, my co-writer, the other day, and we were reminiscing on the writing process. And there was a moment that we both remember where we would watch movies and stuff on our own and then come together and talk about them while we were writing. And then sometimes we'd watch them together. But this particular instance, we had both watched The Butterfly Effect on our own, and we came together and we started talking about, you know, the end of the movie, and James shared his ending with me. And I was like, what? That's not how the movie ended. And then we actually have it on recording because we recorded our writing sessions, but we had this kind of back and forth moment where we're both realizing that there may be multiple endings to this movie. And then we looked it up and there were like four different endings or something like that, that had been released nationwide. It was such a funny kind of moment there. Cause like his ending, like I was like, why on earth would a fetus strangle itself in the wound? Like that's such a vivid, like sensory thing. Like, why would they do that? And then I had seen the ending where they walk past each other and then maybe they recognize each other. And so you can kind of like on that recording, you can kind of see where we're finding our own story too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I specifically remember because back in the days when DVDs were a thing and deleted scenes actually kind of meant something, there was, I watched the director's commentary and he said that he really likes the one where they walk past each other, because if they had gotten together, his standpoint was they would have learned nothing from all of this. So in a way, having to distance yourself in the hopes of coming together is more important than just going after what you want. So a lot of heady stuff, but to round this out,
philosophical stuff in film.
Yeah. So speaking of that, I would say maybe the most sage person on set is probably Danny Glover. What was that casting process like? How was it working with him? And do you just let Danny be Danny?
Yeah, you let Danny be Danny for sure. The first time, I knew him from films such as Dumbo Drop and Angels in the Outfield as a kid. Those were the films that I watched. I didn't watch Lethal Weapon. I had no idea that he was in this like action hero movie. And so I knew he was in it and I'd seen the movies previously. When I talked to him on the phone for the first time after we had cast him, we had like a 10-minute phone call. He called me up out of the blue. I thought I was expecting his call at a later date, but I got a call out of the blue from an Oakland number, and he goes, "Hey, is this Greg?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "It's Danny, baby." And I was like, "Oh my God, this is amazing." So we talked for like 10 minutes. He was walking on the streets of New York. He got recognized 3 times. And then at the end of that phone call, or at the third time, near the end of the phone call, this guy that recognized him was so enthusiastic for having found legendary Pokemon Danny Glover that he was like off the moon, like he was in outer space at that point. And Danny threw him or me, I'm not sure who, I think he threw this to the guy who found him. He was like, "I'm getting too old for this shit." And I was like, "Oh my God," he said the line. He like Danny encompasses what you want out of somebody who is in that position. Like he is the embodiment of, you know, this, he's embraced the pop culture aspect to his characters. And, you know, it's such a charming thing. And he's such a charming person. I think that he's one of those people that if you have him as your hero, it's totally fine meeting him. Like, you will not be disappointed. He's one of the warmest human beings that I've met in this industry. He's amazing. But yeah, working with him, he's a pain in the ass. No, I'm just kidding. He's amazing. He made that experience such a warm, positive one for me.
Nice. And I think what he was able to bring to the role, even in his limited screen time, when he talked about his wife and running that record store, just that you kind of feel there's actors who are legitimate just by walking on screen, and like, he just sort of exudes. So thank you for that story, Greg. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I think the last question for you is more of a technical tidbit. Sure. I know that in the movie, Laura had trouble rewinding the tape, which is actually a really cool way to, you know, limit the amount of time she could go back and try to fix things.
Yeah.
But I remember being a child, I had a couple Sony Walkmans, but I also got this weird off-brand Walkman from my aunt that did not have a rewind. It was only fast forward. So nobody ever thought to have her flip the tape and fast forward, because you fast forward one way and it rewinds the other way. So did that ever come up?
So we wrote it in a way and shot it in a way where she doesn't know that there's another side to the tape, because she's of that generation. But you know, taking the tape out and trying to rewind it, you know, I know that there's a rewind button and there's a fast forward button, but you know, I think that her character in that moment is not thinking 100% clearly. She probably doesn't understand that there's another side to a tape. Although, you know, you can kind of just flip it over to see it, but you know, it worked for the purposes of our story and trying to get her to, you know, kind of understand about second chances and stuff. So yes, there are those that know that you can flip it over and just fast forward it. But I think that there was also like an aspect to the tape that probably wouldn't let her, even if she did.
Yeah.
So
I just was trying to be goofy. Well, Greg, thank you so much for your time. I really got a lot from this. So everyone check out Greg's fantastic movie. Press play any way you can. Go to the store, rent it, stream it, but make sure you press play and don't stop till it's over.